Hi, I'm Jorge.
And I'm Daniel.
Welcome to our podcast, Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe, a production of iHeartRadio.
In which we take the entire universe, slice it up into little pieces, and explain every single one to you, one at a time.
We answer all of your deep and amazing questions about this incredible universe.
And we try to make sure that you come away understanding something, so you can sound smart at the next cocktail party you go to with a bunch of physicists.
Today we have a special episode. We're going to be, once again, answering listener questions.
But not your normal listeners, not your everyday listeners.
That's right. There's a twist today.
Today we have special listener guests.
That's right. Today we have the host of the podcast, The Daily Zeitgeist, Miles and Jack here. And we're going to be answering their questions about the universe, about planets, about quantum machine guns.
That's right. Usually these guys are talking about the daily events of what's going on in the world and what you should care about. But they also think deeply about the universe. So they are here to talk to us about deep questions about the universe.
Very deeply. Record scratch. It's us.
Wow. Listeners. You just hopped in.
Hi, this is Jack. This
was
is
that
what
okay?
I sound like.
Oh, sorry. And this is Miles. This is my voice. Much nicer.
So welcome, Jack and Miles.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your podcast and where can people find
you? You know, it's like a woke morning show. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You wake up, we'll give you the best news. We have it's Jack and I and a comedian, and we just run down the top stories. I have a background in politics, so I'll, you know, talk like I know what I'm talking about. And then Jack does the funny stuff.
So every other morning show is a sleeping morning.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Morning show in comparison.
Very problematic. Weird things are being said.
Wide awake. That is the only our only excuse for
triple
being
triple espresso morning show. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I started the website cracked.com, and I've been doing this for the past year and a half with Miles.
Wow,
it's a good time.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. So do you guys cover science topics as well when you talk about the daily news?
We do. If there's something like I think that's important to humanity or funny.
Right.
So we'll talk about the biomass, like insect biomass just decreasing at an alarming rate. But we don't typically get into super heady stuff because like if it's like gravitational waves territory, I'm like, they're waves, bro.
As long as Miles can see it. He believes it exists.
Exactly. But, so I don't believe in germs.
Or dinosaurs.
So yeah. Do you believe in Scientology? Because I can see that building from here.
You know, yes. I believe it. You're talking to an OT6 operating feet in level 6 right now.
I believe it exists.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then, you're going to have to explain the universe of Scientology to me someday.
Oh, yeah. Do you have a moment? Because I'm feeling
clear, actually.
Yeah, great. I mean, I feel like, I guess Xenu does have a lot to offer us, but I think this may be for another show.
Yes. Yeah. That's a different universe.
Exactly, right. But there are aliens involved, right? Aren't there aliens in Scientology?
Yes. Yeah. Don't be patronizing.
Speaking of aliens.
There are many aliens, but in many different volcanoes.
We talked about Oumuamua, right?
Oh, yeah, we did. Because
yeah.
I think, and that Navy footage where they said they found like an unidentified. That flying object.
Unidentified flying Tic Tac.
Did y'all see that?
You
guys see
interest this? In aliens is never patronizing. It's totally 100% sincere.
Oh, great.
That sounded so sarcastic.
My claims about not being sarcastic are 100% sincere.
Okay, got it.
But what do you think? Did you see that video of that Tic Tac thing? What do you think that was?
I think it's something crazy we don't understand. But
oh, so it is something.
It's something.
That was something.
It's
though.
Something.
Okay.
It's definitely not nothing.
I figure it's just something like a technology we're not familiar with.
Yeah, it could be. Okay. It doesn't have to be like extraterrestrial though.
Right.
It could be weird or not understood. Right.
You're talking
from
about
Oumuamua.
Like fighter pilot footage of how they saw that thing just like rotating and then like inexplicably like accelerating in different directions.
That's weird different. Stuff.
Yeah, and the Pentagon released it like at the end of last year or the year before. Yeah.
That wasn't just special effects.
No, the Pentagon was like, all right, we'll declassify this video if you guys want to see it.
Yeah.
And, wow.
Yeah.
Pentagon is crowdsourcing its intelligence. Internet.
They need it, I guess.
Yeah.
Twitter, do your thing.
Tom DeLong from Blink 182, help us figure this out.
They're like, this is why we invented the internet.
Right.
Exactly.
To outsource our intelligence.
Exactly. Yeah. To capture the intelligence of the genius of the crowds.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, as you guys talk about the daily culture and the daily zeitgeist of the humanity on a daily basis, and I imagine sometimes you must have questions about the universe, about space, about the role that humans and our cultures have in it. And so today you guys have three questions. We're going to try to run through them in the episode today.
Okay.
And they're about planet formation and quantum machines, mm-hmm. guns.
Machines, guns.
And machine guns.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if it was a quantum machine gun or a quantum machine gun.
Right.
Quantum it's a gun machine. That shoots quantum understanding machines. Of quantum mechanics into your brains.
Right.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah,
shoots quarks.
Awesome. Yeah, I think I have the more simple questions, and then Jack is the one about quantum leap or whatever.
Quantum leap.
Quantum.
Yeah. So Scott Bakula.
Yeah, let's talk about the show. What's your favorite
Scott
episode?
Was Scott Bakula an alien after all?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's really a good question.
Almost definitely.
All right. So where should we start?
Oh, let's go nice and easy.
Yeah, right. Wu-Tang Clan. I get most of my scientific questions from the Jizza, and there's a song called Fourth Chamber that asks the question, why is the sky blue? Why is water wet? The second question doesn't make any sense to me, but the first one, I have always been curious. Why is the sky blue?
I love that question. Why is water wet? Actually, it's like a really interesting, deep
question. It's philosophical, yeah.
The Jizza is just too much for my brain to hold.
You know that song, Particle Man?
Yes.
Particle Man, yeah.
When he's underwater, does he get wet, or does the water get him instead?
Yeah. Ooh.
Right? Deep stuff. Yeah.
Mind blown.
I love that.
I guess like as a child, I'm just curious, is the version that I understand the sky to be blue true, which is like, because the ocean? Is that it?
So, it's kind of like a wet and water situation, right?
Oh, okay.
This ocean is blue sort of because the sky is blue, isn't it, Daniel? I'm not the scientist.
There are those. So short answer is the sky is blue, but not because the ocean is blue.
Okay.
But you're not alone in that thought. I walked around campus at UC Irvine yesterday, and I asked a bunch of people, why is the sky blue?
Is that how scientists figure things out?
We crowdsource, man. We crowdsource.
Walk around Irvine.
His internet was down, so.
You got a second? Hey, come here. Professor?
And three out of four people, I mean, I asked more than four people, but three-fourths of them said, because of the ocean.
Right.
So interesting. A lot of people
that's,
that.
I think, the misinformation we're given, like when your parents are like, yeah, hey, because of the ocean.
Yeah, exactly.
I go play with some matches.
So what was your thinking, that the ocean is blue, and so somehow that's making the sky blue?
No, I don't know. And it's just like it's just something I never really bothered to think through that, because half the time when I look at the ocean, I'm like, that ain't blue.
That's right.
It's like green.
The ocean
or whatever.
Also, green gray. If you're in the desert with like 1,000 miles of sand dunes around you, the sky is still blue.
Exactly.
Is it like a jealousy thing? Like this guy was like, ooh, I like that color.
Right.
I'll put on my blue.
They're always fighting. So drop some science.
All right. So why is the sky blue? Well, to answer the question, why is anything any color, you have to think for a moment about what that means to have color, right? And I think there's a basic misperception. Like, light has lots of colors in it, right?
Yes.
And if something is painted blue, for example, that doesn't mean that it absorbs blue light. It's not like sucking in the blueness and is blue. It's reflecting blue light.
Right.
So if something like this Kleenex box in front of me is blue, it means that the paint on it reflects blue light.
And it's absorbing all the other colors.
Like, yeah, and it sucks in all the other colors.
That's why black things get really hot and white things don't, right?
Exactly.
Because they're bouncing all the light back.
And what I know this because the interior of my 99 Prelude was jet black, and in the hot LA heat, I would burn myself on the inside of the car.
There
and that's
go.
Why Jedi's and whatever on Tatooine wear all white, right, to reflect the sunlight. Yeah.
There you go.
All right, so the sky must be blue because it's reflecting blue light, right? And in fact, that's true. The atmosphere, when the light comes from the sun, the light from the sun is mostly white. It's a big mix of colors. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's a tiny bit green, but it's mostly white. Like if you looked at the sun in space, it would be white.
Don't look at the sun, though, directly.
Now,
don't look
true?
At the sun directly. Yes.
When astronauts are out there, do they have to avert their eyes? Or do they have, like, sunglasses?
A sun visor?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a great question. I imagine that NASA sends them up there with sunglasses.
That's a very good
because
point.
A blinded astronaut would be a bad situation.
Right.
Or the astronauts are just smart enough to not look at the sun, and maybe that's how they got to be an astronaut.
The sun's big. I feel like that would be hard.
And this is why you didn't get into NASA, Jack.
Right.
That's right.
You just kept going every day.
Yeah, how long till I get to look at the sun from space?
Is that why you have an eye patch right now? Is that a clear
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
No, that was from the eye patch. That was from the eclipse.
Right.
Told them, don't use those binoculars.
All right, so we got white light hitting the atmosphere, right? And when the light hits the atmosphere, you got the different colors. And the blue light is the one that wiggles the most. It's got the highest energy. And so, light is a wave and it wiggles. So the red light wiggles really slowly and the blue light wiggles really fast. And the blue light bounces off the atmosphere more than the red light does. Like little particles in the atmosphere, when the blue light hits them, they get bounced.
Gotcha. Oh.
Yeah, but it's kind of like it's a scattering, right? It doesn't like bounce off back into space. It's sort of like it hits the atmosphere and then it makes basically glows, right? It makes the atmosphere glow blue. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, I think of it more like it gets reflected. Like, so you're looking up at the sky, you're not looking at the sun, right? Why is there light coming from that part at all? It's because it got reflected. So light from the sun hit that part of the atmosphere and then comes to your eyes. Okay. What part of that light hits your eyes? The part that got reflected, which is the blue light. Just like if you're looking at a blue wall, it's not glowing, right? So it doesn't produce light. It's only reflecting light. It's reflecting the blue light only, right? Atmosphere is the same way. So the atmosphere reflects the blue light, which is why it looks blue.
Mm.
So why does it only reflect the blue and not the other colors?
Yeah, because the blue light wiggles more, and the atmosphere is made of these little tiny particles. And the little tiny particles are better at reflecting things that wiggle more because the wiggles are shorter.
Mm.
And so imagine, for example, you're like walking across a field filled with rocks, right? If the rocks are really, really big, then you're going to get bounced around. It's going to be a big obstacle. The rocks are really, really tiny, like you're walking across the beach, you don't even really notice.
Right.
So the blue light sees like really big rocks because it wiggles more. It's tiny. And so it gets bounced off of them. The red light just like skips over them, like walking over the sandy beach.
Surface over the atmosphere.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. So red light mostly goes through straight through air while blue light gets bounced, which is why you see the blue light in your eyes when you're looking up at the sky.
Oh. So it's
you're
about really the size up. Of the atoms up in the atmosphere? It's not like a quantum electron level kind of thing?
No, it's basically about the relative sizes of the wiggles of the light and the atmosphere. But, you know, bigger stuff reflects all light, like which is why most powders are white, right? Because the particles of the powder are pretty big, so they reflect everything. But atmospheric particles are much, much smaller than the powder you might have in your 93 Prelude,
right?
For example.
Sugar and salt.
Right, the powdered sugar in the back seat of your old car. Yeah, exactly. And so that's why the sky is blue, right? Because it reflects blue light. And it also explains why, for example, sunsets are not blue.
Mm. Right. Wait, how does that explain it?
It's the same atmosphere, right? It's
hitting. I understand it, but explain
it. We were all nodding along to seem smart, but
I mean, I know too. Right. I'm just trying to see if you know, Daniel. So yeah, why is the sky pink during the sunset?
So, if you look at the atmosphere, you're seeing reflected light. If you look directly at the sun, don't do that. But if you were to, you'd be seeing light directly from the sun, where all the blue is removed, right? Because the blue light that comes to you directly from the sun gets bounced away.
Got it.
So you're seeing the redder or the yellower side of the spectrum, right? So the blue is removed, sent somewhere else, and you see the yellows, the reds, the oranges. That's why the sun looks yellow in the sky, right? The sun isn't yellow, it's white.
Right.
But it looks yellow in the sky.
Through the filter of the atmosphere.
Exactly, through the filter of the atmosphere. Now at sunset, you're looking through a lot more atmosphere, right? Mm-hmm. Because the sun is low in the sky, so it doesn't just come through a little bit of atmosphere, it skims along through a lot of atmosphere. So it gets like yellower, so yellow it looks orange and red and darker and darker colors.
Oh, so as like a sphere, like versus just hitting it straight on, because it's like that, you're getting this curvature, this slice that gets way more atmosphere, so you get more. Wow.
So more and more blue light gets filtered out, and then you get just the red light left.
But the whole sky turns pink, or at least half of the sky turns pink.
Yeah, that's mostly because of smog. That's because we live in LA. If the sky was perfectly clear, right, then a sunset would look more yellow and mostly just around the sun. But then that light, that yellowy red light, whatever, bounces off of particles in the atmosphere or smog or whatever, and clouds, and that's what gives you the beautiful sunset. But the color comes from all the blue getting filtered out by the atmosphere.
Does being closer to the equator affect the beauty of the sunset?
I don't know.
Because I think of like tropical places that have amazing suns, there really isn't that much pollution where this. I feel like the smog is influencing the color of the sunset, so I'm curious if that...
Right. You're probably just in a better mood if you're on vacation.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And you're like, oh my God, that's the best sunset ever.
And the locals are like, what?
Cocktails make the sunset better. For sure.
That's a physical effect, for sure.
No, it could also be the haze, like water vapor will do that also.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. There's probably more water vapor clouds at the equation. Mm-hmm. At the equation, as it's called.
Wow, you've embarrassed yourself, Jack.
At the equator. Yes. Let's talk quantum machine guns.
Wow.
Sorry, I'm used to hosting a podcast, so I'm like, moving along.
But first, let's take a quick break. All right, moving on. Jack, what is your question today?
My question is, I would love to hear from, like, your how your brain works in explaining the quantum machine gun theory. Because it's hard for me to get my simple brain around.
Yes, Jack tried, when we were talking about this, he tried to explain it, and I actually just walked away.
Yeah.
Because I did not understand a single thing he was trying to say.
I have a question about your question, though. Why are you so fascinated by quantum machine guns? Are you looking to build one? Is somebody threatening you with one? Are you thinking about purchasing one on eBay and you want to know if it's real, or what's the situation?
No, I mean, it's a very, so I was a philosophy major, and it's like a very philosophical, I don't know what, like, it's where physics.
You can't say I was a philosophy major. Right? It's an eternal thing, isn't it?
I became a philosophy major in
that's
college.
That's a philosophical question in itself.
It's like it gets into, you know, multiverse and all those different things, which it would seem to me would affect just the entire metaphysical reality of of the world. So that's why it interests me, is like, if it is real and not just a thought experiment, it would seem to be like a existence of shaping thing, I guess.
All right, well, we can explain what it is, and then
he talking about?
what is a quantum machine gun, Danny?
Quantum machine gun is like a variation on the Schrodinger's cat experiment.
I know that from Silicon Valley.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. Hollywood is entertaining and educating. Awesome. So the idea there is, put something like a particle that's decaying. We don't know how long it's going to take to decay. Put it in a box, and then when the particle decays, it kills the cat somehow, releases poison or something. And then you can ask the question, is the cat dead or is the cat alive? It's inside the box, so you can't see it, right? It's just determined by what that quantum random particle does. And so the idea is, you put the particle in the box and you don't know whether or not it has decayed, which, you know, has consequences for the cat. And so because you don't know, then you say things like, it's both dead and alive, because there's a probability to be both. Okay, so that's the Schrodinger's cat, right?
Because the particle is both doing both things at the same time. And so if the cat's alive depends on the particle, then the cats must be also dead and alive at the same time. That's the
right
idea,
and
right?
that's actually the heart of the question, which the machine gun example probes also, is what's going on with quantum mechanics. Like, if a particle can do A or B and has probability to do A or B, is it both A and B before you've looked, or has it chosen one, or has the universe split into one universe where the particle has done A and one universe where the particle has done B?
That seems like the simplest explanation, obviously.
Right.
Let's just create a whole new universe every time.
So Max Tegmark took this to the next level, and he said, let's not put cats at risk. Let's put ourselves at risk.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
So he said, let's build a machine gun where the machine gun fires based on what a particle does. Right. So a particle can be spin up or spin down with equal probability. It's like a coin flip, right? And if every time you press the trigger on the machine gun, it asks the particle, are you spin up or are you spin down? If it's spin up, it shoots. If it's spin down, it doesn't.
It's like the particle's in charge of the safety switch of the gun.
Exactly.
So you pull the trigger, but the particle, if it's doing one thing, it will let you shoot. If it's doing the other thing, it won't let you shoot.
Yeah, it's a little like Russian roulette, right? Russian roulette, you know, put 3 bullets in a 6-chamber gun or whatever, you spin it, you have a 50% chance of dying, right?
Right.
The problem with Russian roulette is it's determined. Once you put them in there and you spin it, it's either going to be a bullet or an empty chamber. It's fixed, right? With a quantum machine gun, it's supposed to be truly random. Like, the universe is really random. So when you press the button, Max Tegmark says, the universe splits into two. One where it shoots a bullet and one where it doesn't shoot a bullet.
Mm.
And that's the crazy thing, is imagining like the universe splitting into two universes.
So the thought experiment is like, you go into Schrodinger's box.
Yes,
take out the cat, you put yourself in, and you see what happens.
Yeah, but it's more than that. He says, now build the gun, point it at yourself, and keep pressing the button. What will you hear? Okay. And his point is, you will only hear click, 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 click. You will never hear the gun go off.
Which you would think would be a 1 in a billion probability, right? Because if you're multiplying 50% by 50%, it mm-hmm. gets more and more unlikely that you're not going to hear the gun go off. But
why does it have to be life or death, though? Can't it just be a light?
Yeah.
And then I can go like,
oh, sad or happy. It would make you sad or happy.
Yeah.
No, we got to make it relevant, man.
Yeah, that's true, I guess so, right?
Well, it doesn't also have to do with, I mean, if it was just a light, it wouldn't, you wouldn't cease to exist, right? Yeah. And the idea is that in there are 999 other, like if it's a one in a thousand thing, there are 999 other branches of reality and probability where you did die.
Right.
But because you only exist because you are your experience, then you are only in the one branch that where it didn't go off, essentially.
That's right. There's always one version of the universe in which it doesn't go off. No matter how many times you click a million times, there's some probability for it to never kill you.
Right.
And there's somebody who pressed it a million times and had that experience. There's some version of the universe in which that happened.
So, and that guy's the only one who's still awake.
And he says, you know, you only ever hear clicks. I think you hear a bunch of clicks and then eventually you hear a boom, right? That's the last thing you hear. But there's some version of you that can do as many clicks as you want, right?
Yeah. They both Schrodinger's cat and quantum machine gun theory seem like really good ways for you to make physicists who believe in the multiverse like realize that they don't actually believe in the multiverse. Because you're like, oh, okay, you believe that? Then here, do this thing. Yeah. And if you truly believe in it, then you'll never die, right? Yeah. Because, and I think that was what Schrodinger's cat was originally designed to like illustrate the absurdity of quantum theory.
Mm. Like, how can a cat be alive and dead?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Do you think, is that true? Was that example, did Max Tegmark come up with this example to like, you know, kind of put physicists on the spot?
I think he probably came up with this example to sell his book. Which I think went pretty well for him.
Which sold and didn't sell at the same time.
In some universe, it's a bestseller.
Yeah.
Another universe is a warehouse full of it. But you're the philosopher. Tell me, do you think there's another universe out there where you, you know, did something else this morning, ate a different kind of cereal?
I think it's as good as anything I've come up with on my end or anything I've read.
Is that a high bar or a low bar? I'm not sure.
Not very good. Yeah, very, very low bar. No, I think it's just a really interesting way to think about things. I don't think you necessarily want to think about it if it's going to make you behave recklessly, if you're going to be like, I'm invincible, like driving down
the highway. This is the version where I don't die ever.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the conclusion of the experiment, is that if you're still hearing the click, you must be in the one universe, however improbable, where it just happened.
Running back and forth across the freeway, right? Some version of you survives that for an hour.
Sure.
Some version survives it for a day, and some version gets splat immediately.
But you are only...
Don't do any of these things, by the way.
Exactly.
We're killing all our listeners.
Because, I mean, the reason that they design it where the gun goes off based on a quantum coin flip is because that's really the only truly, like, random thing. So, I mean, you're still on a chain of probability where something is or isn't going to happen unless your existence is being determined by a quantum coin flip.
Right. Which still blows my mind. I mean, I think I understand quantum mechanics as well as I'm ever going to, but I still don't understand how something can be truly random. Like, there has to be some mechanism in the universe that's producing random numbers. There's like some...
What does it mean to be truly random and not truly random? What's the difference?
Well, truly random means not predictable, right? Not repeatable, not determined.
It doesn't depend on anything.
Well, it can depend on something. It can be influenced by it, but you have a distribution where the random draw is not repeatable. It's not determined by the initial conditions, right? It's not...
It's like a true magical box.
Not magical. It's physics, man. But it seems like magic,
it's
right?
Magic. Quantum physics is indistinguishable from magic sometimes. It's really...
I mean, that's quite what you're saying. Like, if we have to define magic, I mean, like, violating the laws of physics is impossible. That would be like Lord of the Rings magic. But if you were to call that quantum nugget there that can give you anything at any given time, you might use the word magic, wouldn't you?
I think you might use the word magic, yeah.
The experts call it physics.
Welcome
to my show.
There's physics we understand and physics we don't yet understand.
Right.
Right. You can call that magic if you like, or you can call it, you know, science fiction or whatever. But
So what's the other form of randomness? Because you said truly random, there's really only truly
there's
random, true random, correct?
And then there's pseudo random, like your computer can generate random numbers. But those are not actually random. Like you ask your computer, give me a series of random numbers, it'll give you the same series every time. So it's not really random.
Right. Right. Or it's going through an algorithm that someone's created. And,
yeah, right, it's an right, algorithm right. for choosing things which, you know, spread the numbers out, basically. Right. But it's not actually random. You give it the same, you ask the same computer the same question, it'll give you the same string of random numbers, right?
Or even throwing a die is not truly random, right? Because you can sort of trace the result back to something you did way back.
That's right.
Whether you decided to put a rabbit foot in your pocket or not. Yeah, right.
Exactly. Right. Magic. Yeah. Physics.
Or did the sign of the cross before
whether or not you skipped your Scientology meeting or not.
I don't skip, Daniel. Don't get me in hot water now. We'll see you. I don't skip for the record.
It's going to get downgraded.
No, you're right. It's not random. It's chaotic, right? Difficult to predict. So it's a good proxy for randomness. Right, but it is totally determined by how you roll the die. You roll the die the same way every time, you're going to get exactly the same answer. That's impossible to do, which is why it's a good proxy for randomness. But yeah, quantum mechanics is the only true randomness in the universe that we know of.
Right, and it seems random because we just can't explain it yet.
Right, although there are experiments they've done that basically prove that it's random.
That it's completely random.
That it's completely random, yeah. There are these crazy experiments. They're really subtle. They're called, it's about Bell's inequality, these correlations between particles where they prove that it can't be determined by the initial conditions. It has to be actually random, which is pretty mind-blowing.
So did we answer your question, Jack? Did we?
That was really...
That actually was a much better explanation. I don't know. It's so interesting, like multiverse theory just in general. So like to even think that there are other questions delving into that is just like another... It's splitting my brain in 9 directions again.
Well, I think the multiverse is bonkers. I mean, that's not a scientific point of view. That's a philosophical point of view.
So you can say bonkers and crazy, but you can't say magical.
Oh, no, magic's not allowed. No, but bonkers. Bonkers.
They're going to bleep that word.
Yeah. And I don't mean bonkers in a negative way. Like, the universe is bonkers. Yeah. I mean, like, the crazy stuff we talk about on our show, like, you know.
How do you wrap your head around it?
Huge spinning stars and black holes and all that stuff is bonkers, even if it's real, right?
Yeah.
But the multiverse is, like, extra bonkers because imagining, like, extra universes being created, all this stuff. I don't know where to put that in my head.
So. A version where you are on our show, Jack and Miles explain the universe.
That's right.
I really want to hear that show, actually.
It would be really a very different kind of universe.
Well, we do have a whole episode about the multiverse and a whole episode about quantum...
Randomness.
Magic.
Yeah. Non-magic randomness.
Bonkers. Quantum bonkers.
I've never heard of a game called Physics the Gathering.
That sounds like the least fun game in the universe.
Right. Yeah. There's nothing on all the cards. It's like, whoa. How do I know I'm winning?
All right. So let's get to your last question about planets. Yeah. But first, let's take our last break of the episode. All right, Miles, you have one last question for
us.
Yes. And it's epic in scale. It's planetary in scale.
It's planetary, yes. It's gigantic. It's probably the best question you've ever been asked, ever.
Wow. Yeah. How are you going to drop in, everybody?
Yeah, this is some real magic stuff I'm going to hit you with.
Miles of Gray. Yeah,
hold on. I got to do some stretches here. Hold on.
Stretch your brain.
Okay.
Let's flexible. Do it. Yeah. That was incredible. He just put his leg behind his head.
I'm hanging from the ceiling. You wish this was a TV show.
Right. Oh, I do. You know, I love space, and I like the solar system.
You don't
system.
Like crowds? You like
yeah, I love space. I'm still on MySpace, actually. I don't use Facebook. anything to do with space. Even on my keyboard, a gigantic space bar, it overtakes the rest of the keys. But planetary formation is just another, not necessarily philosophical thing, because that's a physical phenomenon. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious because once I started reading about the Juno probe that's going around Jupiter, there were some people I spoke with who worked at JPL who were sort of saying like Jupiter has a lot of secrets or it will give us a better understanding of planetary formation in this solar system. And I'm sort of like, well, why can't we look at like Earth? Or whatever. Mm, right. So I'm just sort of like, that got me thinking. I'm like, wow, it's interesting to think. They say if we look at planetary formation as like a cookbook, we're only seeing the finished product, right? Mm. Of everything being cooked or baked or whatever the end thing is like, but with understanding Jupiter, we'll begin to understand the recipe. And that
because
was
they want to make their own solar system?
Yeah, or whatever. But it's interesting to even think, you know, because we live on this physical Earth. What went down, really? Was it magic?
And you said you were at JPL when you got interested in that.
Yeah, yeah, because I at the time I just knew that this was like a very novel, like just a very important experiment. This probe was going out, and it was like months before the first sets of data were going to be sent back. And everyone was just so like, this is, man, like we really, this is the thing. Like Jupiter really is going to help us understand so much, so many other things like weather and all these other things. So it was just so interesting to me that there was this planet out there that if we can study a bit more, like it's going to, it could potentially help us understand many other things that we experience. Mm. So that's why I'm like, okay, yeah, I guess planetary formation is a lot more in depth than merely saying, hey, we're here on Earth, you know, some stuff started swirling around each other, got dense, and then boom.
Yeah.
Well, that basically answers the question.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah, yeah. All right, well, it was really great meeting you.
Boom is the answer.
And density, swirling, boom.
Boom, planet.
You got a planet.
Here's the recipe.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. And I think it touches on something which is like deep in everybody, which is we want to understand our history.
Sure.
Like what went down,
yeah, right?
How did this come about? And is this unusual? Like, are there other solar systems out there that have Earths? Or is it all Jupiters? Is there a solar system out there that's just like all Uranus?
Right. You know,
for example?
Yeah.
Or all Saturns or something? Yeah, so it's pretty interesting stuff. And, you know, the planets, I think one of the interesting things that, about that is that the planets are formed about the same time as the star, right? The whole thing is basically like a big mix. You start with a big cloud of like gas and dust and other stuff that comes from, you know, other stars that blew up.
Right. Right.
So you got like rubble out there in space, and then gravity gradually pulls it together. And most of the gas gets sucked towards the center, so you get this huge star in the middle, right? And then the leftover is just sort of swirling around it, right?
Well, why does the gas come in first?
Why does the gas come in first? It all sort of happens at once. But the gas is light, and so it gets pulled in towards the center.
Oh.
Yeah.
And it rushes in faster, I guess, because it's gas.
Well, I think it's equally distributed, but the gas gets sucked in towards the center faster than the rocks and stuff. Mm. So you end up with, like, a lot of gas at the center, which becomes a star. And then you get, like, you know, where the gas was pulled away, you get rocks, which turn into, like, rocky planets. And then the outer part, you have still have gas and ice and stuff left over, which is why you get, like, big gas giants.
Oh, got
yeah.
it. Okay.
Yeah, so Jupiter is like mostly hydrogen and water and that kind of stuff, whereas Earth is not. It's mostly rock.
Right.
But basically, it's just gravity, right? Gravity, it takes, you know, a long time, but gravity sucks this stuff together. You get a big star, and the stuff that's orbiting around it gradually gathers together, right? So it bounces into each other, and you know, gravity sticks them together and just sort of gradually pulls everything together. As you said, like, density, boom.
Boom.
Yeah. Well, I guess the question is, why do we have planets at all? Why isn't the solar system just a star? Why doesn't everything just get sucked into the middle?
Or why aren't planets just asteroid belts?
Yeah, okay, so there's two different answers there. Why do we have planets at all, right? Why doesn't everything just get sucked into like one black hole or one star, right? Well, there's some things keeping things from falling into the center, right? And that's just enough spinning, right? So the whole blob, when it started, was spinning already. And that spinning can't go away, right? It's angular momentum. Oh. It has to be conserved. You can't just stop spinning.
It's not rubbing against anything to slow it down. It's in space, so it just keeps on spinning.
Somehow you made that sound inappropriate. I mean, I know.
I would have preferred frictionless environments. Did you?
Yeah. It was just weird that you were waggling your eyebrows up and down.
whoa.
Unzipping my shirt. It's just weird, yeah.
The sun does have a history of rubbing inappropriately against things, yes. No, it's out there in space, and there's nothing to slow down. There's no friction, nothing to grab onto. And so it's going to keep spinning forever. Mm. And so the stuff is moving, and it ends up in an orbit, right? It's like asking, why doesn't the moon fall to the Earth? Mm. Because it's moving so fast that it doesn't fall. It like keeps going around the Earth instead of falling. Mm. Same way, the Earth is, and the stuff that made the Earth is not going to fall into the sun because it's moving fast enough. Mm. And it comes from that initial rotation.
Oh, I see. So even though we get the sun, there's still stuff out there spinning around that doesn't want to fall into the sun.
Yeah, exactly. It's moving too fast to fall into the center.
Oh, so it's too good to be the sun.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's like, I'm going to do my own thing.
It doesn't want to rub against the sun.
Right.
But why does it form into planets? Like Jack said, some of it just stays as asteroid belts, like debris. But some of it forms into planets.
Eventually, it'll all gather together. Like, you fast forward the solar system a billion years or so, and you'll have a smaller number of bigger asteroids. Eventually, these things all come together.
Yeah. So the asteroid belt will be a planet?
I don't know about one planet, but like will slowly coalesce.
Really? Huh. Yeah. Billions of years, we could have a new mm-hmm. place to visit.
And the same way, rings turn into moons, right? Rings are not a stable situation for a planet.
Eventually, oh, really?
They gather together and turn it into moons, yeah. Like the Earth probably had rings for a while after it got hit by some other protoplanet and created all this debris that surrounded it, which formed the moon.
Yeah.
We probably had some awesome set of rings, which then gathered together into a moon.
Right.
So Saturn's on its way to having a moon.
Yeah, we don't know how old the rings of Saturn are, but we think they're not very old. I mean, they're millions of years.
Sure, sure.
But on the solar system timescale, they're pretty young. And so that stuff eventually is going to gather together and form larger objects, yeah.
Wow, okay.
Wow. Yeah.
But each planet got different stuff based on where it was in the solar system, right? The closer stuff got the rocks that were left over, not much gas because it got sucked up by the sun. The stuff on the outside is like mostly gas. Like if you look at what's inside Jupiter,
right.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Super compressed, like metallic hydrogen.
Right.
Like it's
metallic hydrogen.
Like. Yeah.
That sounds like a color for a new iPhone or something.
Yeah. Right. We just call it silver, but yeah.
sure.
But the marketing geniuses over in Cupertino, right.
I mean, you often hear Jupiter described as a gas giant. So people think, oh, it's just a big ball of gas. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's gas and then it's hydrogen, but it's not in gaseous state, right? Some of it's like solid. So you could land on Jupiter because it's like it's metallic hydrogen covered by like an ocean of liquid hydrogen and then gas on top of it. So it has an atmosphere, but there's an ocean of liquid hydrogen. I mean, I wouldn't recommend going there without some like pretty nice equipment.
Right.
But yeah,
there's pretty good handle the radiation.
Yeah, but there's something solid there to land on.
Well, I read that like these gas planets out there, they represent 99% of the mass of the solar system. So it's most of the solar system.
Except for the sun, yeah.
Yeah, except for the sun, are in these gas giants way out there.
Yeah, exactly. Most of the mass in the solar system is the sun. That's like 99%. Then of that 1%, most of it's the gas giant planets, right? Because remember, the Earth is about 1/10 of the radius of Jupiter, which is about 1/10 the radius of the sun. Right.
Oh, right.
Yeah, remember that.
I just remember as a kid, they're like, there could be, I don't remember the number, but it's like so many Earths could fit in the sun. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, right, Ms. Holton. I'm out of here. I don't need this. I'm in third grade.
But I just feel like you always forget that.
Yeah.
Volume goes by like the radius cubed, so you could fit, it's only 10 times wider, but you could fit 1,000 Earths into Jupiter.
Sure.
Wow. And you could fit 1,000 Jupiters into the sun. Right, so it's a million Earths.
So that's the number, million Earths.
A million, yeah. Exactly.
Good to know.
It's a cool million.
A cool mill, exactly. Yeah, so you're right. Jupiter is huge, and most of the stuff that's not in the sun is in Jupiter. Yeah, it gobbled up all this stuff. But we should be grateful, right? Actually, Jupiter being really big could have saved our lives.
Because asteroids that would destroy Earth get sucked into Jupiter?
Yeah, exactly. It's acting like a linebacker out there, like cleaning out the solar system, gathering all that stuff. I don't know if you guys remember, but like 20 years ago or so, there was a huge comet that entered the solar system and then like slammed right into Jupiter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Comet Shoemaker-Levy. It was really awesome. It got broken up.
Oh, Shoemaker-Levy. I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, it slammed into Jupiter, and each piece that hit, it got broken into like 20 pieces, made a huge fireball like bigger than the Earth.
So if that had hit us, it would have like caused a big wave. Like, we would have had to.
We'd probably be recording a very different podcast. Yeah.
We'd be recording on Jupiter.
Yeah. Right. So shout out to Jupiter. Thank you so much for everything you do. I didn't realize how much of a debt we owed to Jupiter. Now I have a new appreciation for it.
Cool. So that's the answer to planet formation. Is just gravity and stuff just that doesn't want to fall into the sun out there. It starts to clump together.
Mm-hmm. We get the leftovers and we get a beautiful Earth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With beautiful sunsets.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And some call that magic.
All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us today. And be sure for those of you listening to check out their podcast, The Daily Zeitgeist.
Yeah. Monday through Friday.
Monday through Friday.
Do you want to give them the Twitters and the Facebooks?
Oh, yeah. You can find our show at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter, at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. I'm at Miles of Gray, G-R-A-Y, on Twitter and Instagram.
And I am at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys. And if you guys have any question out there, anyone listening has any questions?
Send us an email at feedback@danielandjorge.com. Send us your philosophy questions. Send us your physics questions. Send us your dating questions. We'll give physics answers to all of those.
But not your magic questions.
There are no magic questions.
Only magic answers.
Yeah.
All right. See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in. If you still have a question after listening to all these explanations, please drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Daniel and Jorge, that's one word, or email us at feedback@danielandjorge.com. Thanks for listening, and remember that Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.